I'm Michael Hawes. You're listening to Bobcat Logic.
Ich bin Berliner, Part 2, A Tale of Two Kitcheners. If we read the story of the chosen namesake of the old town of Berlin, Ontario, we see a privileged young man schooled in military tactics in Montreux and Britain. He is showered with enough titles, medals, knighthoods, orders, and Masonic ranks to choke a pony. In South Africa, where Kitchener was sent after having had adventures in India, Afghanistan, Palestine, Egypt, and many other places coveted by the British Crown, the Boers were fighting the British using guerrilla tactics. Conditions in the concentration camps, which had been conceived by the first Earl Roberts to control the families whose farms he had destroyed, began to degenerate rapidly as a large influx of Boers outstripped the ability of the minuscule British force to cope. The camps lacked space, food, sanitation, medicine, and medical care, leading to rampant disease and a very high death rate. Eventually, 26,370 women and children, 81% of which were children, died in the concentration camps. The Boer forces disintegrated, and with the war apparently effectively over, First Earl Roberts handed over the command on the 12th of December to Lord Kitchener. While he was at this task, American troops were exterminating Filipinos two oceans away in the same spirit of proper progress that would later manifest as the residential school systems of Australia and Canada. Here are several interesting articles about those days. Women and children in the white concentration camps during the Anglo-Boer War, 1900 to 1902. Boer women, children, and men unfit for service were herded together in concentration camps by the British forces during the Anglo-Boer War II, 1899 to 1902. The first two of these camps, refugee camps, were established to house the families of burghers who had surrendered voluntarily, but very soon, with families of combatant burghers driven forcibly into camps established all over the country, the camps ceased to be refugee camps and became concentration camps. The abhorrent conditions in these camps caused the deaths of 4,177 women, 22,074 children under 16, and 1,676 men, mainly those too old to be on commando. Notwithstanding the efforts of an English lady, Emily Hobhouse, who tried her best to make the British authorities aware of the plight of especially the women and children in the camps. Timeline, 1900. September. Major General J.G. Maxwell announces that, quote, camps for burghers who voluntarily surrender are being formed at Pretoria and Bloemfontein. This signals the start of what was to evolve into the notorious concentration camp policy. 22 September. As a result of a military notice on this date, the first two refugee camps are established at Pretoria and Bloemfontein. Initially, the aim was to protect the families of burghers who had surrendered voluntarily and their families by the institution of these camps. As the families of combatant burghers were also driven into these camps and other camps, they ceased to be refugee camps and became concentration camps. 20 December. A proclamation issued by Lord Kitchener states that all burghers surrendering voluntarily will be allowed to live with their families in government lagers until the end of the war, and their stock and property will be respected and paid for. 21 December. Contrary to the announced intention, Lord Kitchener states in a memorandum to general officers the advantage of interning all women, children, and men unfit for military services, also blacks living on the Boer farms, as this will be, quote, the most effective method of limiting the endurance of the guerrillas, end quote. The women and children brought in should be divided in two categories, viz. First, refugees and the families of neutrals, non-combatants, and surrendered burghers. Second, those whose husbands, fathers, and sons are on commando. The preference and accommodation, etc., should of course be given to the first class. With regard to natives, it is not intended to clear locations, but only such and their stock as are on Boer farms. End quote. Timeline, 1901, 21 January. Emily Hobhouse, an English philanthropist and social worker who tried to improve the plight of women and children in the camps, obtains permission to visit concentration camps. Lord Kitchener, however, disallows visits north of Bloemfontein. 24 January. Emily Hobhouse visits Bloemfontein concentration camp and is appalled by the conditions. Due to the limited time and resources, she does not visit the camp for blacks, although she urges the Guild of Loyal Women to do so. 30 January. Pushing panic-stricken groups of old men, women, and children, crowded in wagons and preceded by huge flocks of livestock in front of them, French's drive enters the southeastern Zaar, or Transvaal. 31 January. Mrs. Isie Smuts, wife of General J.C. Smuts, is sent to Pietermaritzburg to be placed under house arrest by the British military authorities, despite her pleas to be sent to the concentration camps like the other Boer women. Concentration camps have been established at Aliwal North, Brandfort, Elandsfontein, Heidelberg, Howick, Kimberley, Klerksdorp, Viljoensdrift, Waterfall North, and Vinberg. 25 February. A former member of the Free State Volksrad, H.S. Viljoen, and five other prisoners are set free from the Greenpoint camp near Cape Town. They are sent to visit Free State concentration camps with the intention of influencing the women in the camps to persuade their husbands to lay down their arms. They are met with very little success. 27 February. Discriminatory food rations, first-class rations for the families of hands uppers, and second-class rations for the families of fighting burghers, or those who refuse to work for the British, are discontinued in the Transvaal concentration camps. 28 February. Concentration camps have been established at Kromelenburg, Middelburg, Norwelspont, Springfontein, Volksrest, Vredefort Road. At the Middelburg Conference between Supreme Commander Lord Kitchener and Commandant General Louis Botha, Kitchener comments to Lord Roberts, now Commander-in-Chief at the War Office in London, quote, "They," referring to the burghers, "evidently do not like their women being brought in, and I think it has made them more anxious for peace," end quote. The conference is discussing terms of a possible peace treaty. Sir Alfred Milner leaves Cape Town for Johannesburg to take up his duties as administrator of the new colonies. 1st March, concentration camps in the Orange River and Transvaal colonies are transferred to civil control under Sir Alfred Milner. 4th March, Emily Hobhouse visits the Springfontein concentration camp. 6th March, discriminatory food rations are also discontinued in the Orange River colony camps. 8th March, Emily Hobhouse visits Norwelspont concentration camp. 12th March, Emily Hobhouse visits Kimberley concentration camp. 6th April, Emily Hobhouse returns to Kimberley. 9th April, Emily Hobhouse visits Mafeking concentration camp. 12th April, Emily Hobhouse witnesses the clearing of Warrenton and the dispatch of people in open coal trucks. 13th April, Emily Hobhouse returns to Kimberley, witnessing the arrival of people removed from Warrenton at the Kimberley camp, where there are only 25 tents available for 240 people. 20th April, the town of Perry's and Vredefort and many other outlying farms have been cleared of inhabitants and supplies. The women and children have been removed to concentration camps. 21st April, Emily Hobhouse arrives in Bloemfontein. 23rd April, Sir Alfred Milner refuses to issue a permit to Emily Hobhouse authorizing her to travel north of Bloemfontein. 4th May, Emily Hobhouse arrives in Cape Town. 7th May, Emily Hobhouse leaves for Britain after an extended fact-finding tour of the concentration camps. 14th June, speaking at a dinner party of the National Reform Union in England, Sir Henry Campbell Bannerman, leader of the liberal opposition, says the war in South Africa is carried on by methods of barbarism. 17th June, David Lloyd George in England condemns the concentration camps and the horrors inflicted on women and children in the camps in South Africa. He warns, quote, "A barrier of dead children's bodies will rise between the British and Boer races in South Africa," end quote. 18th June, Emily Hobhouse's report on concentration camps appears under the title "To the SA Distress Fund, Report of a Visit to the Camps of Women and Children in the Cape and Orange River Colonies." Summarizing the reasons for the high fatality rate, she writes, quote, "Numbers crowded into small tents, some sick, some dying, occasionally a dead one among them, scanty rations dealt out raw, lack of fuel to cook them, lack of water for drinking, for cooking, for washing, lack of soap, brushes, and other instruments of personal cleanliness, lack of bedding or of beds to keep the body off the bare earth, lack of clothing for warmth, and in many cases for decency," end quote. Her conclusion is that the whole system is cruel and should be abolished. 26 June, Lord Kitchener in a telegram to Milner, quote, "I fear there is little doubt the war will now go on for considerable time unless stronger measures are taken. Under the circumstances, I strongly urge sending away wives and families and settling them somewhere else. Some such unexpected measure on our part is, in my opinion, essential to bring the war to a rapid end." End quote. 27 June. The British War Department promises to look into Emily Hobhouse's suggestions regarding improvements to the concentration camps. 30 June. The official camp population is 85,410 for the white camps, and the deaths reported for June are 777. 15th July. Dr. K. Franks, the camp doctor at Mafeking concentration camp, reports that the camp is overwhelmed by 1,270 women and children brought in after sweeps on the Western Czar, Transvaal. Lack of facilities adds to the hardships encountered by the new arrivals. 16th July, the British Colonial Office announces the appointment of a ladies' commission to investigate the concentration camps in South Africa. The commission, whose members are reputed to be impartial, is made up as follows. Chair Lady, Mrs. Millicent G. Fawcett, who has recently criticized Emily Hobhouse in the Westminster Gazette. Dr. Wayne Watterson, daughter of a British general, who recently wrote against the, quote, "hysterical whining going on in England," end quote, while, quote, "we feed and pamper people who had not even the grace to say thank you for the care we bestowed on them," end quote. Lady Anne Knox, wife of General Knox, who is presently serving in South Africa. Nursing sister Catherine Brereton, who has served in the Yeomanry Hospital in South Africa. Miss Lucy Dean, a governmental factory inspector on child welfare. Doctor, the Honorable Ella Scarlett, a medical doctor. One of the doctors is to marry a concentration camp official before the end of the tour. 20 July. Commenting on confiscation of property and banishment of families, Sir John Broderick, British Secretary of State for War, writes to Kitchener, quote, "Your other suggestion of sending the Boer women to St. Helena, etc., and telling their husbands that they would never return, seems difficult to work out. We cannot permanently keep 16,000 men in ring fences, and they are not a marketable commodity in other lands," end quote. 25 July. Since 25th of June, Emily Hobhouse has addressed 26 public meetings on concentration camps, raising money to improve conditions. 26 July. Emily Hobhouse again writes to Broderick asking for reasons for the War Department's refusal to include her in the Ladies' Commission. If she cannot go, quote, "it was due to myself to convey all interested that the failure to do so was due to the government," end quote. 27 July, St. John Roderick replies to Emily Hobhouse's letter, quote, The only consideration in the selection of ladies to visit the concentration camps beyond their special capacity for such work was that they should be, so far as is possible, removed from the suspicion of partiality to the system adopted, or the reverse." End quote. 31 July. The officially recorded camp population is 93,940 for the white camps, and the deaths for July stand at 1,412. 16th August. General De La Rey protests to the British against the mistreatment of women and children. 20 August. Colonel E.C. Ingouville Williams' column transports General De La Rey's mother to the Klerksdorp concentration camp. A member of the Cape Mounted Rifles notes in his diary, quote, "She is 84 years old. I gave her some milk, jam, soup, etc., as she cannot eat hardtack, and they have nothing else. We do not treat them as we ought to." End quote. 31 August. The officially recorded camp population for white camps is 105,347, and the camp fatalities for August stand at 1,878. 13 September. The Meerbank refugee camp is established near Durban in an attempt to reduce the camp population in the republics. Its most famous inmates are to be Mrs. Duvet and her children. 30 September. Cornelius Broeksma is executed by an English firing squad in Johannesburg after having been found guilty of breaking the oath of neutrality and inciting others to do the same. A fund is started in Holland for his family, and for this purpose a postcard with a picture of himself and his family is sold, bearing the inscription, quote, "Cornelius Broeksma, hero and martyr in pity's cause. Shot by the English on 30 September 1901 because he refused to be silent about the cruel suffering in the women's camps." The officially recorded camp population of the white camps is 109,418, and the monthly deaths for September stand at 2411. 1st October. Emily Hobhouse again urges the Minister of War, quote, "In the name of the little children whom I have watched suffer and die," end quote, to implement improvements in the concentration camps. 26 October. As the commandos in the Bethel district, Transvaal, become wise to Benson's night attacks, his success rate declines and he contents himself with ordinary clearing work, burning farms and herding women and children, old men, and other non-combatants with their livestock and vehicles. 27 October. Emily Hobhouse arrives in Table Bay on board the SS Avondale Castle, but is refused permission to go ashore by Colonel H. Cooper, the military commandant of Cape Town. 29 October. Reverend John Knox Little states in the United Kingdom, quote, "Among the unexampled efforts of kindness and leniency made throughout this war for the benefit of the enemy, none have surpassed the formation of the concentration camps." End quote. 31st October. Despite letters of protest to Lord Alfred Milner, Sir Walter Hayley Hutchinson, and Lord Ripon, Emily Hobhouse, although unwell, is forced to undergo a medical examination. She is eventually wrapped in a shawl and physically carried off the Avondale Castle. She is taken aboard the Roslyn Castle for deportation under martial law regulations. The officially recorded camp population of white camps is 113,506, and the deaths for October stand at 3,156. 1st November, Miss Emily Hobhouse, under deportation orders on board the Roslyn Castle, writes to Lord Kitchener, quote, "I hope in future you will exercise greater width of judgment in the exercise of your high office. To carry out orders such as these is a degradation both to the office and the manhood of your soldiers. I feel ashamed to own you as a fellow countryman." End quote. And to Lord Milner, quote, "Your brutal orders have been carried out, and thus I hope you will be satisfied. Your narrow incompetency to see the real issues of this great struggle is leading you to such acts as this and many others, staining your own name and the reputation of England." End quote. 7 November. The governor of Natal informed Sir John Broderick that the wives of President Stein, General Paul Roux, Chief Commandant C.R. De Wet, Vice President Schalk Berger, and General J.B.M. Herzog, the last four all presently in Natal, are to be sent to a port other than a British port outside South Africa. Lord Milner, referring to the concentration camps, writes to the British Colonial Secretary Joseph Chamberlain, quote, "I did not originate this plan, but as we have gone so far with it, I fear that a change now might only involve us in fresh and greater evils." End quote. 15 November. In his general review of the situation in the two new colonies, Lord Milner reports to Chamberlain, quote, "Even if the war were to come to an end tomorrow, it would not be possible to let the people in the concentration camps go back to their former homes. They would only starve there. The country is, for the most part, a desert." End quote. 16 November. On being questioned by St. John Broderick on his motivations for proposing the deportation of prominent Boer women, Kitchener cancels his orders. 21st November. Referring to a scorched earth raid, Acting State President S.W. Burgers and State Secretary F.W. Wrights address a report to the Marquis of Salisbury, the British Prime Minister. Quote, "This removal took place in the most uncivilized and barbarous manner, while such action is in conflict with all the up-to-the-present acknowledged rules of civilized warfare. The families were put out of their houses under compulsion, and in many instances by means of force. The houses were destroyed and burnt with everything in them, and these families among them were many aged ones, pregnant women, and children of very tender years were removed in open trolleys for weeks to rain, severe cold, and terrible heat, privations to which they were not accustomed, with the result that many of them became very ill, and some of them died shortly after their arrival in the women's camps. The vehicles were also overloaded, accidents happened, and they were exposed to being caught in crossfire. They were exposed to insults and ill treatment by the blacks in service of the troops as well as by the soldiers. British mounted troops have not hesitated in driving them for miles before their horses, old women, little children, and mothers with sucklings to their breasts." End quote. 30 November. The officially recorded camp population of the white camps is 117,974, and the deaths for November are 2,807. 1st December. Fully aware of the state of devastation in the republics and trying to force the Boer leadership to capitulate, Lord Milner approves a letter that Kitchener sends to London with identical copies to Berger, Stein, and De Wet. In the letter, he informs them that as they have complained about the treatment of the women and children in the camps, he must assume that they themselves are in a provision to provide for them. He therefore offers all families in the camps who are willing to leave to be sent to the commandos as soon as he has been informed where they can be handed over. 4th December. Lord Milner comments on the high death rate in the Free State concentration camps. Quote, "The theory that all the weakly children being dead, the rate would fall off, is not so far borne out by the facts. I take it the strong ones must be dying now, and that they will all be dead by the spring of 1903. End quote. 7 December. In a letter to Chamberlain, Lord Milner writes, quote, "The black spot, the one very black spot, in the picture, is the frightful mortality in the concentration camps. It was not until 6 weeks or 2 months ago that it dawned on me personally that the enormous mortality was not incidental to the first formation of the camps and the sudden inrush of people already starving, but was going to continue. The fact that it continues is no doubt a condemnation of the camp system. The whole thing, I now think, has been a mistake." End quote. 8th December. Commenting on the concentration camps, Lord Milner writes to Lord Haldane, quote, I am sorry to say I fear that the whole thing has been a sad fiasco. We attempted an impossibility, and certainly I should have never touched the thing if, when the concentration first began, I could have foreseen that the soldiers meant to sweep the whole population of the country higgledy-piggledy into a couple of dozen camps." End quote.
Come on, Zigzag. Looks like rain.
Street today, the Canadian dream was as far away as it's ever been, as it's ever been. I went out on the street today, the Canadian dream was as far away as it's ever been, as it's ever been. Stay.